Okay, let's cook. It's ethics time. Okay, so there are three core principles of ethics. There's autonomy, beneficence, and non-maleficence. Beneficence, we know what autonomy is. Beneficence is we act in the patient's best interest. It might conflict with autonomy or what's best for society. The principle of double effect is facilitating comfort is prioritized over the side effects. For example, providing opioids to an end-of-life care patient or end-of-life care. And then non-maleficence is do no harm. Most med and surgery fall under this. Must be balanced with beneficence or whatever. So we have to act in their best interest, but we also have to not harm them. So toggle with that, I suppose. Next is decision-making capacity. We have to determine if the patient is psychologically and legally capable of decisions. Decisions made with capacity can't be revoked, even if the patient loses capacity later. Intellectual disability and mental illness only matters if it impairs the patient of making their own healthcare decisions. Capacity is determined by a healthcare worker, so you determine the capacity, and competency is determined by a judge. So you determine capacity, a judge would determine competency. So the four major components of decision making is understanding. You ask them, what do you know about your condition? What do you know about your procedure? What do you know about this treatment? Two, appreciation. What does your condition mean to you? Why do you think your doctor is recommending this treatment? Three, reasoning. How are you weighing your options? And four, expressing a choice. What would you like to do? That will get you pretty much every question right. Jinx, or knock on wood or whatever. Anyways, informed consent. Okay, so informed consent. The patient should be informed of their right to revoke written consent at any time, even orally. So if they back out of this at the last second, they're allowed. Exceptions to informed consent are the following. One, waiver. The patient explicitly relinquishes the right of informed consent. Two, legal incompetency. If the patient lacks the capacity to decide / obtain consent from legal surrogate. Oh, sorry, I misstated that. If they're legally incompetent, which means they lack the capacity to decide, you obtain the consent from their legal surrogate. Done. The next is therapeutic privilege. If disclosure would harm the patient or undermine informed decision making. I don't know what the fuck that means. If disclosure of informed consent would harm the patient. Okay. And then the last one is emergency. Implied consent usually applies in emergencies. So first aid remembers it as wipe it away. So W, waiver, I, legally incompetent, I is the incompetent part, legally incompetent, P, therapeutic privilege, and E, emergency. Talking about minors' consent, so under 18 years old, it varies with state laws, but exceptions to minors' consent, obtaining consent from their parents. The exceptions to having to get consent from their parents are emergency treatment, if they're legally emancipated, EX, married, military, or self-supported. Sex, you don't have to tell the parents about contraceptive, prenatal care, STIs, and usually abortions, but who knows nowadays. Drugs, like substance use disorder treatments. So first aid remembers it as sex, drugs, and rock and roll. Rock and roll being emergency / trauma. You should encourage communication and seek assent. But If it is any of those exceptions, you do not have to obtain parental consent. You do not have to disclose it to the parents. Next, we're going to talk about advanced directives. These are instructions given by patient in anticipation of the need for medical decisions. The first type is oral, and that is where the incapacitated patient's prior oral statements are used as the guide. Problems arise in this type of advanced directive with the variance in interpretation. The next advanced directive is a written advanced directive, for example, a living will. The next is the medical power of attorney. This is when the patient designates a person to make decisions for them if they lose capacity. The patient can specify decisions in clinical situations. So they can be like, my husband can make the decisions, but I don't want to be on a vent. So that, like, they still ultimately have the final say. And it can be removed by the patient with intact decision-making capacity. So if you, like, understand what you're doing, you definitely can revoke the medical power of attorney that you've given to someone. And a medical power of attorney is more flexible than a living will. Next form of advanced directive is DNR. DNR states no CPR, but they might be able to receive other care like NG tubes, chemo, intubation, etc. Next is vent assisted life support. You need to discuss it with the patient before the need ever arises, like before they need to be ventilated at all. But often that's not like what happens, and so often we rely on surrogates with vent associated life support, obtaining consent in that way. Surrogate decision makers, so the way that it goes, like in priority or who you listen to spouse first, then adult kids, then parents, then adult siblings, then other relatives. And we only do surrogate decision making if the patient has no advanced directive. So spouse, adult kids, parents, adult siblings, other relatives. Next, confidentiality. Confidentiality, there are not a lot of exceptions. The only exception of confidentiality is if there is potential harm to self or others, and it is serious and imminent. Gifts, we can accept small and expensive gifts. We have to say no if it's large and expensive or if it could potentially affect care or cause emotional or financial stress to the patient. Yes for that. Who's to say if it's large or expensive? Establishing rapport. These are the aspects of establishing rapport. There's partnership, empathy, apology, respect, legitimization, and support. So partnership, you work together to identify primary concerns and develop preferred solutions. Empathy, acknowledge the emotions displayed and demonstrate understanding of why the patient is feeling that way. Next, A is apology. Take personal responsibility when appropriate. R is respect. This is commend the patient for coming in to discuss the problem, pushing through challenging circumstances, keeping a positive attitude, and other constructive behaviors. So you be a cheerleader. Legitimization is assuring the patient that emotional responses are understandable and common. And then support is you reassure the patient that you will work together through difficult times and offer appropriate resources. I'm going to sneeze. I didn't sneeze. Deadass. Anyways, oh my god, I can feel it in the back of my nose. So that's establishing rapport, and first aid remembers it as PEARLS, P-E-A-R-L-S. But TBH, that's kind of like, yeah, duh. Next is delivering bad news. So delivering bad news, first aid says spikes, S-P-I-K-E-S, spikes. S is for setting. Offer in advance for the patient to bring support, eliminate distractions, ensure privacy, and sit down with the patient to talk. P, perception. Determine the patient's understanding and expectations of the situation. I, invitation. Obtain the patient's permission to disclose the news and what level of detail is desired. K, knowledge. Share the information in small pieces without medical jargon. Allow them time to process and assess their understanding. E is for emotion. Acknowledge the patient's emotions and provide opportunity to express them. Listen and offer empathetic responses. And then S is strategy. If the patient feels ready, discuss treatment options and goals of care. Offer an agenda for the next appointment. And this giving control to the patient might be empowering. It might give them, you know, a little comfort. And ask how they feel a problem might be solved and what they would like to do about the plan of action. So once again, kind of just like being a good human. Motivational interviewing. Motivational interviewing, the goals are specific, measurable, achievable, relevant, and time-bound. They are smart. We're smart at emotional interviewing. We are specific, measurable, achievable, relevant, and time-bound. All of our goals should be that. And then trauma-informed care. Just a little bullet point, because I feel like, you know, once again, it's just being a good person. This is the four R's. We realize, recognize, respond, and resist re-traumatization. Okay, now I'm going to read through some challenging cases really quick. So I'm going to name the situation and then what you do. So, patient does not follow the medical plan. Determine whether there are financial, logistical, or other obstacles preventing their adherence. Don't coerce them into adhering or refer the patient to another physician. We're not allowed to just shove them off on another physician. Schedule regular follow-ups to track their progress. Next is a patient desires an unnecessary procedure. Attempt to understand why they want it and address underlying concerns. Do not refuse to see them or refer them to another physician. Avoid performing unnecessary procedures. Next, the patient has difficulty taking medication. You want to determine what factors are involved in the difficulties. If it's comprehension, memory, you can use techniques such as written instructions, using the teach back method, or simply simplifying treatment regimens. Next, a family member asks for information about the patient's prognosis. Avoid discussing details or issues with relatives without the patient's permission. You have to ask the patient if that's chill. Next is a patient's family member asks you not to disclose the results of a test if the prognosis is poor because the patient will be, quote unquote, unable to handle it. What do you do? Explore why the family member believes that way, including like possible cultural factors. Explain that if the patient would like to know the information concerning their care, it will not be withheld. However, if you believe the patient might seriously harm themselves or others, if informed, you may invoke therapeutic privilege and withhold the information. So it's the vibe. Just read the room, I guess. Next, a 17-year-old is pregnant and requests an abortion. Many states require parental notification or consent for minors for an abortion. Unless there are specific medical risks associated with the pregnancy, a physician should not sway the patient's decision for or against an elective abortion, regardless of the patient's age or fetal condition. Discuss options for terminating pregnancy and refer to abortion care if needed. Next is a 15-year-old is pregnant and wants to raise the child, but the parents they want you to tell the patient to give the child up for adoption. The patient ultimately retains the right to make the decisions regarding the child, even if their parents disagree. You want to provide information to the teenager about practical aspects of caring for a baby. You need to discuss options for terminating the pregnancy as well, if requested. You want to encourage discussion between the parents and the patient to reach the best decision. Next is a terminally ill patient requesting physician-assisted suicide. We're not allowed to assist them die. We can't do that. But we can prescribe medically appropriate analgesics, even if they potentially shorten the patient's life. Next, the patient is suicidal. You want to assess the seriousness of the threat. If they're actively suicidal with a plan, suggest remaining in the hospital voluntarily. But if they say no, you can literally hospitalize them involuntary if you need. Next is the patient states that you're attractive and asks if you would go on a date. Use a chaperone if you feel scared. And then romantic relationships with patients are never appropriate. You need to set firm professional boundaries with direct communication. And if needed, if he keeps being creepy, you transition care to another physician. Next, a woman who has had a mastectomy says that she feels ugly. You want to find out why she feels this way. Do not offer falsely reassuring statements. We're not allowed to say you still look good. Even though I feel like that's not human and IDK, whatever. Next, the patient is angry about long wait time spent in the waiting room. Acknowledge the patient's anger, but do not take the patient's anger personally. Thank them for being patient and apologize for the for any inconvenience. Stay away from explaining. Don't try to explain why you're late. Next, the patient is upset with treatment received from another physician. Suggest that the patient speak directly to that physician regarding the concern. If the problem is with a member of office staff, reassure the patient that you're going to talk to them. Next, an invasive test is performed on the wrong patient. Regardless of the outcome of the test, you are ethically obligated to inform that patient of the mistake. Next, a patient requires a treatment not covered by insurance. Discuss all treatment options with the patient, even if some of them are not covered by their insurance companies. Inform patient of financial assistance programs. Next, 7-year-old boy loses a sister to cancer and feels responsible. At ages 5 through 7, children are beginning to understand that death is permanent. All life function ends completely at death, and everyone that is alive eventually dies. Provide a direct, concrete description of his sister's death. Avoid cliches and euphemisms. Assure the boy that he is not responsible. Identify and normalize fears and feelings, and encourage play and healthy coping behaviors. Example, remembering her in his own way. Next, the patient is victim of intimate partner violence. Ask if the patient is safe and help devise an emergency plan if there isn't one. Ask the patient direct, open-ended questions about exam findings and summarize patient's answers back to them. If they have any questions, ask them if they have any questions. Don't necessarily pressure the patient to leave the partner or disclose the incident to the authorities unless you are required by state law. Next is patient wants to try alternative or holistic medicine. Explore any underlying reasons with the patient in a supportive, non-judgmental manner. Advise them to know the benefits and risks of treatment, including adverse effects, contraindications, and medicine interactions. Consider referral to an appropriate complementary or alternative medicine provider. Next is a physician. A colleague presents to work impaired. Fry his ass. Dead ass. You can't. Nope. Okay, moving on. The patient's family insists on maintaining life support after brain death has occurred, citing patient's movement when touched. Gently explain to them that there's no chance of recovery, that brain death is death. Movement is due to spinal arc reflex and is not voluntary. Bring the case to appropriate ethics boards regarding futility of care and withdrawal of life support. Next, a pharmaceutical company offers you a sponsorship in exchange for advertising their new drug. Say no. Fuck capitalism. Next, patient requests a non-emergent procedure that is against your personal or religious beliefs. You need to provide accurate and unbiased information so the patient can make an informed decision. In a neutral, non-judgmental manner, explain to them that you don't perform the procedure, but offer to refer to another physician. BT dubs, this is a non-emergent procedure. Non-emergent. Next, we have a mother and a 15-year-old daughter are unresponsive and bleeding heavily, but the father refuses transfusions because they're the Jehovah's Witnesses. Save the kid. Let the mom die. It's their choice, but save the kid. Next, a dependent patient presents with injuries inconsistent of the caretaker's stories. You need to document detailed history and physical, if possible and appropriate, interview the patient alone. Provide any necessary medical care. If you're still sus, if you're still a little suspicious, contact the appropriate agencies or authorities, EX, Child Protective Services, Adult Protective Services. Inform the caretaker of your obligation to report it. And you are required by law to report any reasonable suspicion of abuse, neglect, or endangerment. And lastly, a pediatrician recommends standard vaccinations for a patient, but the child's parent refuses. Address any concerns that the parent has, explain the risks and benefits of vaccination and why they're recommended. Don't administer routine vaccinations without parental consent. Boo. Boo, boo, boo. Anyways. Okay, that was ethics. Next time we're going to talk about healthcare delivery, and that should only be like 5 minutes, so that's going to be chill.